got a troubled mind. Wash it out and hang it up on a clothing line, and the sun will shine. All the worries gonna leave my troubled mind. I've got a broken thing.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Biotech Facts and Fallacies podcast. I'm your host, Cameron English. Today I'm chatting with Zach Abbott. Zach is a microbiologist and the founder of a California-based company called ZBiotics. And the company genetically engineers microbes for products that help your body handle everything from chemicals and alcohol to dairy to serious contaminants like radiation and lead. And their first product is a probiotic that helps you avoid hangovers, which is super cool in its own right, of course, because we've all had alcohol at some point, and sometimes the effects are not terrific. But Zach says the company's overarching mission with this first product and with the other things they're going to bring to market is to change how consumers view genetic engineering. So instead of seeing GMO crops as this mysterious thing that's really scary and potentially dangerous, they want people to see just how big of an impact this technology can have on their lives. So thank you so much for listening. Here we go. All right, Zach, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Cameron, for having me. I'm really excited.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting conversation for sure. So before we get into the weeds and we start talking about probiotics and genetic engineering, tell me a little bit about you. Why did you become a microbiologist? Do you have some kind of experience, or did you read some book that really sparked your interest in science?
You know, it sort of was like a happy accident in some ways. I've always been like really interested in science, and you know, I used to dress up as like a mad scientist for Halloween every year and stuff as a kid, and always really loved that. But I, you know, ultimately it was sort of like a winding path that actually brought me to science as a career. You know, in college I ended up double majoring in molecular and cell biology, but also classical history, and I went on an archaeological dig. And after college, I was working in kind of various different industries, and ended up kind of finding my way back to science through a friend basically got me a job in a lab, and it was an HIV lab. And I'd always kind of been fascinated and captivated by HIV as a public health problem, and just was really interested in particular in how in that disease specifically that public health measures were as effective or more in a lot of cases than drug distribution in certain communities. And so I thought that, you know, this marriage of all these solutions to really like solve huge human problems is something that always inspired me. And so when I applied to grad school, eventually I thought, you know, okay, I want to do this. Was working in an immunology lab. And so when I applied to grad school, I applied to immunology programs, not microbiology programs, but I happened to get into Michigan's program, which was a combined microbiology and immunology. And I did my first rotation out of like desperation because the one I wanted to do in an HIV lab fell through. And I ended up working on bacteria, just kind of thinking it would just be like a fun kind of whatever 3 months and I'd move on. And I fell in love with it and just became a microbiologist, obsessed with bacteria and bacterial gene regulation. And it was all serendipitous in a lot of ways, but I'm so happy that, you know, I found my way to it because, you know, I can't imagine doing anything else now.
Very cool. It's an interesting story how it's almost accidental, really. You can't plan for where your future takes you. So this is a quote from your website. I went to the science section because I'm a total nerd, and I was really excited by what I was reading here. So this is a quote, and I want you to take this and then explain what your company does. So you guys write, "Microbes naturally look for and adopt new traits that are useful for survival. They do so by continuously looking for new DNA and incorporating it into their own cells." So first and foremost, explain that phenomenon, because it's actually a pretty solid definition of genetic engineering. And then explain how you guys capitalize on that to do what you do.
Definitely. I love this like observation about bacteria, right? Like I think people think of genetic engineering as something where we like hacked or tinkered our way into into the DNA strand or something. But truthfully, it's like, you know, we just like throw DNA into a tube with bacteria and they do all the work. And this is a mechanism that has evolved over billions of years, longer than most of the life on the planet has even been around. And you know, the hypothesis is that bacteria will take up foreign DNA, you know, for two reasons. One, it's, you know, potentially, I mean, there's sort of alternative hypotheses that are probably not mutually exclusive, that they're searching for beneficial traits. They pick something up and if it helps them out, they'll survive and reproduce. Or the other one, which I thought was really interesting, and it's probably realistically the reason why we can leverage it for genetic engineering, is they pick up pieces of DNA that are most likely, you know, because bacteria replicates so frequently, they're most likely around relatives of themselves, right? And so they, you know, should have relatively identical DNA to all the sister cells that kind of have reproduced alongside them. And they pick up the fragments of DNA from their sister cells and then like really swap it into theirs to try and fix mistakes that they made in their DNA replication, right? So they look for relatively identical pieces of DNA and then swap them in thinking like, oh, maybe, you know, my sister did a better job of replicating than I did. And so that's sort of the one of the hypotheses. And so what that's called is homologous recombination. And basically the bacteria identifies that the DNA is very, very similar. And then it swaps it for this in the same sort of similar region of their own chromosome. And so we just take advantage of the fact that the bacteria just naturally do this. They take up the DNA and they swap it out. And so what we do is we code for a strand of DNA that has this similar stretch in it. But then next to that similar stretch, we encode like a trait that we want the bacteria to incorporate. And so it recognizes that homologous region and then swaps it in. And then we get, and then the bacterial chromosome now has this new trait. And so it's really just leveraging something that bacteria have naturally done for, you know, billions of years. And it's how bacteria acquire new traits and how they evolve and adapt generally. And so we're really just kind of directing that as a way to improve the bacteria in some way.
Yeah, that's super cool stuff. And I apologize in advance for this really detailed question, but I'm hoping, you know, talking more now about this first product that you guys are bringing to market right now, tell us very briefly about alcohol metabolism and then how this probiotic you guys are developing mitigates some of the very painful next day effects that most of us are familiar with.
Right. Yeah. The, you know, when you drink, essentially most of the alcohol you consume is absorbed in your bloodstream, and then it is eventually processed by your liver in two stages. So your liver is very good at this. It uses one enzyme to break down alcohol into acetaldehyde. And then it uses a second enzyme to break acetaldehyde into acetate. And acetate is essentially vinegar. It's innocuous, and your body expels that or further metabolizes it into carbon dioxide and water. That being said, a small amount of alcohol is actually, you know, processed directly in your gut before it's absorbed into your bloodstream. And that's largely done by the microbiome. And in that case, you have a good deal of breakdown of the alcohol into acetaldehyde, but not the subsequent second step of acetaldehyde into acetate. And that ends up being a problem because acetaldehyde is a really toxic molecule. It's actually 50 times more toxic than alcohol itself. And so very little of that intermediate kind of escapes from the liver, but in the gut, it tends to accumulate. And you actually end up getting 5 to 10 times higher levels of acetaldehyde collecting in the colon than you do in the bloodstream because of this. And so what we've really done is really just completed the reaction that typically takes place in your liver in your gut. We've engineered this bacteria using homologous recombination, like we just talked about, to express an enzyme very similar to the one your liver uses as a way of just completing that reaction, that two-step reaction, so that, you know, acetaldehyde doesn't accumulate in the gut and then go out in your bloodstream and wreak havoc.
Wow. So I see this being potentially really huge, especially for people that are consuming alcohol regularly. But before we get to like how the reaction to it and so on and so forth, without getting too technical, I know this is super challenging. So again, I'm sorry, but how do you actually take the enzyme that does all the heavy lifting and put it into the bacteria for this product? Can you just kind of give us a bird's eye overview of that?
Yeah. I mean, that part is actually quite straightforward. You know, we know the DNA sequence that encodes for this enzyme. And The enzyme, the category of enzyme we're talking about is, it's called an acetaldehyde dehydrogenase. And so it essentially removes a hydrogen from acetaldehyde to make it acetate. That enzyme is actually extremely present. It's a very old, evolutionarily speaking, a very old enzyme. And so it's actually present in 70% of all life on the planet. And so it's a well-studied enzyme, and there are many, many, many different versions of it. You know, even in the human body alone, we have genes that encode for, you know, I think maybe 12 different acetaldehyde dehydrogenases or aldehyde dehydrogenases. And so we really just looked through the literature and looked and saw, you know, what were some promising enzymes that we thought that our probiotic bacteria would be good at expressing, and, you know, that had a good, you know, robust performance enzyme kinetics. Like, they were able to break down acetaldehyde quickly and break down a lot of it. And so we just searched and we found a sequence of DNA that encoded for a really great acetaldehyde dehydrogenase. And then, as I say, we just sort of we put it next to homologous regions of DNA from our bacteria and used homologous recombination to have the bacteria take that up and start expressing that protein internally in the bacteria.
Thank you so much. I know that's challenging because there's so many different things that you have to incorporate into an explanation, but that was awesome.
I apologize if that's not, I don't know if that was clear or not, you know, that, but I hope that answers kind of.
No, I think that's great. And at least for me as just a consumer and a journalist, when I started to see those basic details, it's like, well, you take this gene from here and you put it over here and it does X, and it clicked in my head and I went, oh, that's cool. That's why they do that. Okay. So anyways,
that's probably a simpler way to say it. Then we slopped it in to another place, and that's pretty much how it works. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you guys used the analogy of a copy and paste mechanism on your website, but yeah.
It's like a sort of like a find and replace, you know. And so the homologous region is sort of the find, and then the bacteria have their own, you know, machinery to essentially, once they do find, to just replace and swap in that new gene.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Okay, so moving on, what have, I know you guys have said that you guys have tried it on yourselves, your own guinea pigs, and it seems to work. Has the FDA looked at this yet? Have any regulators looked at this? Has any outside expert looked at this yet?
We have generated, you know, a safety dossier. We spent the last 2 years testing the product and generating safety data. And in addition to making sort of the genetic argument, which is sort of what we've been talking about, wherein we took a bacteria that has already been intentionally consumed by humans for thousands of years. We then just took that safe bacteria and then put in a gene encoded by about 70% of all life on the planet, including our own bodies. So, you know, really just genetic, from a genetic perspective, we're combining two things we already know to be safe. That being said, we did do extensive in vitro and in vivo tests to demonstrate the safety of the product. And we saw that at 1,000-fold higher doses than, you know, we're selling, it had the same safety profile as water. And so that data was reviewed by a board of independent food toxicologists. And the in vivo data is in the final stages of peer review at the Journal of Toxicology. We're just waiting. We submitted it. They sent it back with you know, requests for very minor revisions, which we've done and submitted back. And we're just kind of waiting for it to go through that finalize that process essentially. And so all that safety data is also public. We, you know, pre-printed that that paper and the summary of all of our safety data once that's called a GRAS dossier. Once that's finalized, will be, you know, published on our website as well.
Yeah, thank you. And just for the uninitiated, so in vivo in this case means you did animal studies. I believe you fed this product to rats, is that right?
Yeah, correct. So the in vitro studies were all done, you know, that test tube studies of cell cultures and things like that. And then for the in vivo studies, we did do a 90-day rat study. And so we administered, three different doses ranging from the dose we're delivering up to 100-fold higher or 1,000-fold higher to rats for 90 days. A note on that sort of, my personal stance and also ZBiotics' stance is that it is unfortunate that we had to do animal studies for several reasons, and not least of all the sort of needless waste of animal life, to have to prove that something we know to be very safe, was, you know, sort of, but unfortunately that's a considered kind of a gold standard, for safety, in the eyes of, you know, regulatory bodies. And so we really wanted to have that, particularly because it's kind of like, you know, it's the first genetically engineered probiotic to go to the market. And we wanted to make sure that we were very rigorous and responsible in our safety testing. And so, you know, we do advocate for, you know, replacement of animal studies wherever possible, and reducing the need for animal studies as much as possible going forward. But, you know, unfortunately in this case, you know, we had to do that. We felt, to be responsible.
Yeah, that's an interesting stance to take, and good for you guys for making a point on that, on top of doing the work that you're doing. So, tell me a little bit about the product itself. How does it work? What's the reaction been? I believe it's for sale now, right?
Yeah, we just launched it last week, so that's pretty exciting for us. And could you repeat the question?
Yeah, of course. So when people take this, what's their reaction been to it? I'm sure, yeah. And you guys took it first. So tell me, how did you react to it, I guess?
Okay, you know, it was right after I made the product, and it was still just me working in the lab, and I tested it on myself, and I wrote like a protocol for how many drinks I felt like I should drink in order to, you know, potentially feel some pretty nasty next day symptoms, and see if the product, you know, helped at all. I had, you know, obviously, because we're, you know, 2 years later, we're still talking about it, but I had a great experience with the product. And then subsequently, I've taken it, you know, at this point in the last 2 years, you know, probably at least 100 times. You know, and have always had really positive experiences. We, you know, slowly expanded out to having some friends who were willing to, you know, try it out with us and sort of be kind of those early kind of alpha testers. That went great as well. And so then we, you know, expanded out, and we ended up having a beta sampler program, where, you know, we ended up giving out maybe 10,000 samples over the last 2 years to people to try. And the response has been just overwhelmingly positive. And, you know, we solicited official feedback and, you know, got hundreds of responses and surveys, and saw, you know, over 94% of people, you know, perceived a benefit of the product. And so, you know, we were really encouraged by all the positive responses that people have been giving us for the product. And, you know, and then the last week we've been selling it, and, you know, and the people who have given it try already, you know, we've gotten several really, really excited emails and things like that. And that's, you know, honestly, part of the fun of starting a company is getting to hear things like that, that you've done something that people really perceive the benefit of.
Yeah, definitely. I imagine that is very exciting as an entrepreneur to see your ideas sort of take life and move forward. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think you told Chemical Engineering and News just the other day that you think genetic engineering gets a bad rap, and you think that this product and maybe some of the other things you develop in the future can help change that negative perception. Is that a fair summary? And then if so, how do you see that happening?
Absolutely. I mean, the fundamental mission of ZBiotics is to really elevate the conversation around genetic engineering, and really demonstrate the value of the technology directly to consumers, and both through products that they can really feel the benefits of for themselves, but also through, you know, education and having, you know, a reasoned conversation around genetic engineering. And so I think that there's a lot of people out there who are concerned around GMOs and genetic engineering. And to be completely honest and to be completely fair, I mean, there is that concern is reasonable, right? It's a new technology relatively. I mean, it's now 20 or 30 years old, but, you know, it's in a lot of people's minds, it's the first they're hearing about it. And that's part of the problem, right? Was that there was not a lot of transparency in previous decades about this technology. And I think a lot of people felt like stuff was happening behind their backs in the food system. And I can completely empathize with that. And I think that, you know, the goal of ZBiotics is not to say, don't worry, trust us, GMOs are all good, because that's definitely not how we feel. It's more about saying like, hey, here's what this technology can do to benefit your life. But here are, you know, the things that, you know, understanding of people's concerns. Like we hear what you're saying, and it's not about like being pro GMO or anti GMO. It's about, you know, advancing a really powerful technology that can really benefit humanity, but in a way that addresses people's concerns. And I think that like having a reasoned and rational conversation is really what's missing. A binary debate, I think, is really a disaster. People put their heads in their echo chambers and they don't listen to each other. And then you get a situation kind of like the abortion debate where there's no conversation happening anymore. It's really like who can be loudest and who's going to win. It'll be a winner and a loser. But I think that with genetic engineering, there's a very clear path to setting up a win-win situation. And that's really what we want to do at ZBiotics.
And I'm sure you're familiar with this research, given the what you're saying now and the way you're presenting your product. But a lot of the research that we've looked at and done some work on, which I'll post to the website, it shows that when you implement genetic engineering to make medicine, whether it's a vaccine or a leukemia treatment or whatever it is, people aren't fazed by that at all because you're directly improving their lives. So if you give a parent or you give a child this medicine, and you go, well, it's GMO. And like, I don't care. Give it to my kid. I want him healthy. So are you guys trying to mirror that approach, or have you come to this independently?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we take that as encouragement that, if you use the technology in a way that presents a benefit to the user, then they're more equipped, I should say, to be able to make a reasonable cost benefit analysis, right? Like, if you tell people like, hey, like we genetically engineered your food and now it's, we get more yield per acre. So you take this new food that's different than what you're used to and we benefit from it, or maybe like there's just like kind of like, higher arching, societal benefit, but like, how do you weigh the costs and the risks there? Whereas if I say like, hey, we genetically engineered this product and it's designed to make you feel better the day after drinking. And then that allows you to say to yourself, okay, like, well, here's the risk. Like it's a technology I don't know and understand as well as I do other things. But on the other hand, like here's the benefit. And then you can kind of make an informed decision in your own way. Right. And so that I think is a really important thing. And so like you point out, like with medicines, it's like, okay, well, I don't really understand the technology for how it was built, but I do know that this disease is really bad, right? And like diabetes is a great example that, we make almost all the insulin that we give to diabetics now using genetic engineering, genetically engineered microbes. And so there isn't an issue in that scenario, right? Because people understand the benefit. So I think that that is really our goal, right? And one of the reasons why I decided to start with the morning after effects of drinking was because I wanted people to have a visceral readout for themselves about the product. I didn't want people to have to take my word for it or, go to our website and look at our data or whatever. Obviously it'll be there, but at the end of the day, I wanted people to be able to take our product, wake up the next day, and if they felt better than they expected, then they could say that they had a positive experience of genetic engineering for themselves. They could feel that for themselves. And I felt like that was going to be more effective and beneficial in as I say, elevating that conversation than anything else we could do.
Yeah, it's an interesting approach for sure. And to tag on to the comments about medicine, I think if people feel great the next day after taking your product, and that's what it's supposed to do, it's going to be hard to challenge that in the minds of consumers, I think. So I don't know if you guys ever will, but if you ever get guff from some activist group and they say, well, your product's not tested enough, and all your consumers go, but it works, So I think that's a really interesting strategy for you guys, but then more broadly for science and medicine to approach it that way. And it seems to be having an effect. So that's really cool. What else are you guys working on, if you're working on anything yet? Do you see other things in the pipeline that are going to have a similar impact, or are there other questions you're at least looking at examining down the line?
Absolutely. The technology is great. We got to talk a little bit at the beginning of this about, kind of what we're doing from a technical perspective. And I don't know if I did a very good job of explaining the simplicity of it, but I mean, it's really great, right? The bacteria do all this work on their own in terms of kind of taking up new traits. And all it really is sort of like, as I see it, at least, is sort of a partnership between us and bacteria. They go about their business and then we say like, hey, well, here's this extra trait that if you wouldn't mind while you're floating through our gut, you could just do this as well. And there's so many things we can do with that. And I think that there's a ton of potential. We think that, this is the first genetically engineered probiotic to hit the market ever, but we certainly don't think it'll be the last. There's so many things that we can build. And so, in the lab right now, we really like the idea of building things that people, as I said before, like with this product, can really perceive the effects of for themselves, really provide a visceral readout for consumers in their daily lives, right? Like, as you said, there's not a problem, you know, people don't have an issue with the technology when it's used in sort of like severe disease state scenarios, but we really like the idea of kind of everyday stuff. So there's lots of things kind of in our modern life where when we consume them, they, you know, create some undesirable kind of side effect or byproduct. You know, doesn't make you, you know, it's not necessarily something that is dangerous, right? Like, so for instance, with like drinking milk, lactose can cause discomfort in some people, and that's undesirable, right? But they still like eating a grilled cheese sandwich. And so making a probiotic that is 10,000 times better at breaking down lactose than you know, a standard probiotic could be really beneficial. And so we see things like that, you know, the idea of allowing people to absorb nutrients more effectively from their foods, or turning undesirable, you know, ingredients or products in food into more desirable products, you know, could be really beneficial to gut health. And then, of course, there's the idea of sequestering toxins from the drinking water and things like that. And so I think that there's a lot of really cool things we can do that will really benefit people in their everyday lives. And capture people's imagination about, you know, all the amazing things that we can do when we team up and work with microbes rather than try and kind of like work against them.
Yeah, that's super cool. Thanks for that summary. And I'm just reminded, I interviewed an entomologist a while back who runs a biopesticide company. And so she takes microbes and turns them into stuff that's totally benign in the environment, but it kills the insects that eat her food, you know? So it's interesting to see this whole, and it's a different field from you guys, but this whole broad field of research, like enlisting microbes to solve our problems, I think that's really cool. So where can people find out more about your work? Are you guys on Twitter and Facebook and all that? Give us a little plug for where people can get more info.
Yeah, the best place is our website. We put a ton of work into kind of having a lot of information there about the science, about genetic engineering and GMOs, probiotics, you know, and of course about our products specifically. You know, we worked really hard, and I think there's a lot of really cool stuff there, a lot of really good information. Our goal is to get good information out there. But of course, as well, as with any company, we do have a Twitter page, and Instagram and Facebook, and we try and highlight kind of interesting stuff of the day on those as well. So those are great places to go to.
Cool. So it's zbiotics.com. And then what's the Twitter handle?
Yeah. So zbiotics.com is a website. Our Twitter handle is zbiotics company. You know, Instagram and Facebook at Zbiotics.
All right. Very cool. Well, Zach, thank you for joining me. It's been a great conversation. And then when you guys invent the thing that makes lactose intolerance go away, give me a call and we'll do this again.
Yeah. Awesome. Sounds good.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for us. We will see you next time. As always, I want to remind you to check us out on iTunes and Spotify, and check out the podcast at geneticliteracyproject.org.